Good afternoon. The Congressional Redistricting Subcommittee will come to order. DJ, please call the roll.
Chair Saroy.
Here.
Vice Chair Tuck.
Here.
Ranking Member Skidmore.
Here.
Representatives Beltran.
Here.
Benjamin.
Here.
Brown has been excused. Fabricio.
Here.
Fetterhoff. Here. Fisher has been excused. Gilombardo.
Here.
Harding has been excused. Hunchowski.
Here.
Joseph has been excused. Mazzullo has been excused. Morales.
Here.
Perez has been excused. Plakin.
Here.
Silvers.
Here.
Toledo.
Here.
Tribolsi.
Here.
Williamson.
Here.
Ex officio Learned.
Here.
Quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, DJ. Members, a few reminders before we begin. Please silence all electronic devices. And if you wish to make a public comment, please fill out a form and turn it into the sergeant staff. Also, as a reminder for our members and presenters, please ensure that you turn off your microphone. That you turn on your microphone when you're speaking and you turn it off when you're finished. Members, we're going to get through this. Welcome to our last interim committee week of the year. I'm excited for today's presentation. But before we jump in, I want to take a moment to set the tone for today's meeting. On Monday, the House released two workshop maps that we will be walking through during today's meeting. As you may have guessed, once our maps were released, the self-anointed partisan political class jumped to the headlines to give their commentary as soon as possible, without even reserving the opportunity for explanation or to observe this committee meeting today. As I have said before, and I will say it again now, the partisan narratives and rhetoric will not have a place in this committee process. As legislators and constitutional officers, we are held to a high standard, and I do not intend on letting us waver from that high bar. With all of the political rhetoric that's constantly being tossed around in the media, very little of it speaks to the constitutional standards that apply to our maps. That irony is not lost on me, nor should it be on you either. External groups are judging us on the very thing we cannot evaluate, consider, or even know. I ask you to divest yourself from those external groups and their partisan narratives, which are aimed at imputing their political ambitions into your decision-making. On a more positive note, I do want to commend the members of this committee and our colleagues throughout the House, for I have heard little similar commentary. I believe that is a testament to the understanding of how complicated, technical, and specific Florida's rules are that govern redistricting. Everyone here understands this process is not cut and dry, and I encourage our members to continue taking the high road as we keep moving through this process. On our agenda today, we have two congressional maps that we will workshop and walk through. I want to be clear, opposite of what you may have heard in the media, these are not final maps. These are not bills. These are not a PCB. These are exactly what we called them, workshop maps. The House has been deliberate in taking steps to educate members on the foundations and legal framework for redistricting, and this is the next step in that process. As we move through the explanation of each region of the state, you will see very different district configurations. These are not slight variations on a single base map, but are instead meant to illustrate the policy concepts before this committee. And between these two workshops, there is no preferred map, and both options have been prepared in consultation with legal counsel to ensure that applicable state and federal law are being followed. As we all know, there are many ways you can draw district lines, and today is a starting point for our deliberations. Members, let me be clear once again. There is no single constitutionally perfect map. There are a multitude of options reflecting varying map drawing policy decisions at our disposal that fall within the constitutional standards. Today is about members asking questions, understanding the policy decisions that are before us as a committee, and giving feedback for future work product. As has been discussed extensively during all three redistricting committees, Tier 1 and 2 of Florida's Constitution standards and applicable case law have guided our discussions and educational efforts during committee meetings and serve as the same threshold for our committee staff in the drafting of these workshop maps. This can include, but is not limited to, observing political boundaries, such as county and city boundary lines, or geographical boundaries, such as roadways, rivers, or railways, while creating district boundary lines. Members, as we work through these options, you'll see the tangible examples of how often our Tier 2 standards create tension among one another and the appropriate ways to resolve that tension. Now, with all of that being said, let's talk about some of the guardrails for today's discussion, starting with our Tier 1 requirement to not favor or disfavor an incumbent. I addressed this during a previous committee meeting, and I want to take a moment to discuss it again here. Redistricting means change for all members. The movement of district lines may have the effect of pairing a member with a fellow incumbent or of changing your district to where you no longer reside within the new boundaries. I understand that such things can impact members individually. However, it will not be part of the process or conversation here today. When we deliberate our lines, or when we deliberate where our lines are placed, our intent and decision-making cannot be based on a current incumbent or a potential challenger. Similarly, our committee staff doesn't know where you live and did not use your address or anyone else's as a consideration point while preparing these workshop maps. I will not let this committee consider matters that violate the Constitution. Secondly, for a variety of reasons we've already reviewed today, consideration of the partisan impacts of a map or of an individual district will not be allowed. We did not take partisan impacts into consideration in preparing the workshop options being presented today, except to the extent necessary to review elections data to complete the functional analysis where legal precedent dictates it is required to appropriately protect minority groups' ability to elect a candidate of their choice. Additionally, as we move through today's presentation, I highly encourage members to ask questions or offer comments in alignment with our constitutional standards. In today's meeting materials, you will find familiar slides outlining the constitutional standards in case anyone needs a quick reference as to what we must follow. My vision for today's meeting is for staff to walk us through the two workshop options that were rolled out on Monday. We will be using the live ESRI map drawing application to view these districts. I encourage you to take notes as we move throughout the presentation, as we'll run through an explanation of the entire state before taking questions. This will help us ensure that we don't spend too much time on a single region, limiting the amount of time we have for other regions of the state or questions. We will take questions from members. After we take questions from members, we will move to public testimony. Members, I feel confident in the workshop products that we have before us today, and as we walk through them, I believe that you will be able to see firsthand the constitutional standards and framework that we've been discussing over the last handful of meetings, as well as our educational efforts really come to life. And with that, I would like to hand it over to our staff director, Lita Kelly, to begin the presentation. Ms. Kelly, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first thing, members, I'd like to point out, obviously with the release of maps today, we assume you may be getting questions from constituents or perhaps your own team members as well. I wanted to take a moment and show on floridaredistricting.gov, which is our joint website we've produced with the Senate, where you can find the workshop products that we're going to be walking through today and their associated data reports. So if you, showed on the screen here is floridaredistricting.gov. I have the submitted plans page pulled up. I would encourage you to use this first filter option here to pull up house-specific maps that have been submitted. And as you see, the first two here are workshop products 8005 and 8007, which are the two that we'll be walking through today. So again, I just wanted to take a second and show where your constituents can find that, or again, if your teams need reference as well.
I'm sorry, Representative Fetterhoff, we're going to hold questions for the end of staff presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The other thing before we dive into the substance of the meeting, I wanted to talk you through the meeting packet that you guys have before you today. So we presented, we prepared a PowerPoint presentation in case our live map drawing software is a little too far away to see. You guys have the ability to not only take notes on it, but we have the same snapshot regions of the state that we'll walk through in our presentation. Also found in that PowerPoint packet are two slides that deal with Article 3, Section 16 of the Constitution, as well as Sections 20 and 21, which speak to our constitutional standards specific to redistricting. So again, just wanted to prepare you with a quick reference there. At the end of the PowerPoint, in the meeting materials, there's also an over-under map, which shows our counties as well as our congressional districts and how that population has changed from 2010 compared to 2020. And so again, just helping to understand how population shifted across the state over the last decade. The last item I'd like to walk through is the large meeting packet that was found in front of you at your desk here whenever you arrived today. These are what we've called our statewide snapshot packets, and they have the first sheet is a actual snapshot of the map, so you can see it in its entirety. The map itself has a couple call-out boxes that focus on some of the more populated areas where districts may be a little smaller, so you can see that with more detail. If you flip to the second page, this is what we've called our statewide snapshot, and it has a lot of the high-level statistics, some of which you'll hear us talk about today, and they follow a lot of our constitutional standards as well. I'll come back to that top box here in just a second, but if you segue down to the second portion that's on the page two, this actually is a district-by-district breakdown, and so it goes through all 28 congressional districts, highlighting our population for those respective districts, the percentage of the Black voting age population, the Hispanic voting age population, as well as the respective compactness scores for each district. So again, as we move through the state, everyone can conceptually understand how these districts relate to one another. Going back up to the top item, before we segue into what I have pulled up on screen here, a couple things I just want to point out, which are unique to our congressional map. So you can see the first couple boxes talk about population, as well as population deviation. As I know you all are aware, but just to point out for anyone following along as well, our congressional standard is plus or minus one person. And so as you can see, and you see it in the box on the bottom as well, 27 of our 28 districts are exactly the same population in every district. If you're looking in map one, the district that deviates from that is district 22, which is minus one person. And in option A, if you're looking at that packet, it's district 21, which is also minus one person. The other statistics I'd like to call your attention to, just for a point of reference as we move throughout our presentation, is back in that statewide snapshot on the top, and it's our county and city splits. So between the two maps, if you're kind of, you know, doing a side-by-side comparison, both of these maps have a split 20 counties, which implies they keep 47 counties whole. In option A, we have a total of 33 cities that are split, and in option B, we have a total of 40 cities that are split. And as our team walks through that presentation, you'll kind of understand where, you know, for the starting deliberation, we've made some of those decisions and what that looks like in context with compactness scores and keeping counties whole, other decisions along those lines. So with that being said, I just wanted to make sure we walked folks through the materials. The other two items that are found in the larger sized meeting packet, continue on the next page on page three is the county share of population breakdown. So for every county, it is indicated which districts it may be split between. And then if you look to the statistics on the side, it tells respectively what percentage of that county's population resides within the respective district that it may be split amongst. Similarly, if you continue on to page five, we have a city split list, which again goes through the cities that may have been split in the map and again their respective share of population that appear in each of those districts. All right. So with that being said, I'd like to hand it now over to our team members, Kyle and Jason, who are also staff members with the redistricting committee. They are going to walk us through a district-by-district comparison of our two workshop options. What I have up here on the screen that I'll be navigating through simultaneously are both of our workshop options. And what we would like to be able to demonstrate to the members on this committee is being able to see some of those differences side by side. So if you are able to see the items on the screen, or again, members similarly in that PowerPoint packet, the option here on the left is Workshop A, and on the right is Workshop B. With that, I'll turn it over to Jason. Kyle, thank you.
All right. Starting in District 1, and we're both workshop A and B, Districts 1, 2, 3, and 4 are the same in both options. District 1 begins with keeping three whole counties, Escambia, Santa Rosa, and Okaloosa, and then splits Walton County for equal population. The boundary District 1 uses with District 2 primarily follows State Road 83 and follows the municipal lines of Freeport and Dufuniac Springs in order to keep both cities whole. Freeport is kept whole within District 1 and Dufuniac Springs within District 2. Next, jumping to District 3, which is a protected district in this region, and it impacts both District 2 and District 4. CD3 is a protected black district that it was drawn to protect the black population's ability to elect a candidate of their choice. A functional analysis conducted by staff ensures District 3, the minority group's ability is not diminished to elect a candidate of their choice. It includes four whole counties, Madison, Hamilton, Baker, and Gadsden County being Florida's only majority-minority black county in the state. It also includes parts of four others, Leon, Duval, Jefferson, and Columbia counties. District 2 takes the remaining population in Walton County and the parts of Leon, Jefferson, and Columbia County that are not in District 3 and encompasses 15 more whole counties in order to create District 2. It achieves equal population within Leon County in order to keep the county lines whole on its eastern boundary of Columbia, Levy, and Gilchrist. By achieving this the equal population within Leon County, we are able to not break those county lines and split into another county such as Alachua or Marion. Moving over to CD4, CD4 encompasses all of Nassau County and takes the remaining part of Duval County that is not included in District 3. These two areas leave the district approximately 213,000 people short of the population needed for a congressional district, so the district drops into St. John's County for the remainder of its population and keeps the city of St. Augustine wholly within District 4. The other cities in St. John's County are kept whole in the remaining part of the county. As an alternative, instead of going into St. John's, if District 4 was to, say, go into Clay County for its remaining population, it would have created a wraparound, irregular, and non-compact shape, therefore, which is why it grabs the remaining population to the south. And now I'm going to turn it over to Jason to go over the next region.
Thank you, Kyle. So moving south from District 4 in St. John's County, this is where the two options, A and B, start to diverge. This was done to demonstrate a policy choice that can be made, what to do with the rest of St. John's County, and how even a small decision about how to change what you do with the population in just half of St. John's County, whether you attach it to counties to the west or whether you go south, how that can have a ripple effect throughout the map and change what the districts look like. So that was purposefully done to illustrate to the committee members how a small decision like that can impact a greater region. So with that, we'll start with District 5. We'll start with District 6 in Option A, which takes that section of St. John's County and combines it with all of Flagler County and further goes south into Volusia County. That leaves District 5 to be encompassed of five whole counties, which is Alachua, Union, Bradford, Clay, and Putnam counties. It then splits Marion County and to get the remaining part of its population, including the entire city of Ocala. That's what that bump is that you can see highlighted right there. It uses a lot of state roads on the opposite sides of the city, State Road 19 and U.S. Highway 441, except where it achieves equal population and some other county roads in the area. District 6 now moving back over there, because District 5 in Option A keeps those five counties together and goes into Marion County. District 6, again, takes that portion of St. John's County, combining it with Flagler County, then goes into Volusia County, and then a little bit of the flag on the top of Lake County to fill out the remainder part of its population. Volusia County is not kept whole. It is split by two districts in the south that we'll go through a little bit more later. In option B, because District 5 is the one that takes that population in St. John's County combined with Flagler County and combines it with Putnam County, Union, Bradford, and part of Alachua County to extend that district east, connecting St. John's County to the west, it then changes the configuration of that district. It also moves the county split from Marion County into Alachua County, demonstrating another policy choice that can be made simply by including different populations into different districts. We move a county split from Marion County into Alachua County. So small decisions like that can have a ripple effect throughout the map. Now, because District 5 goes east and takes that portion of St. John and Flagler County, District 6 then cannot encompass the same area. So it begins getting its population solely in Volusia County. Now, Volusia County is a very interesting county. It's one of the few counties in the state that has a dense population center, both on the coastal side, keeping a lot of the cities there that you can see highlighted, along with cities like DeBary, Orange City, and Deltona that are closer toward the center part of the state and has a large area in the middle that does not have a lot of population. So District 6 takes a lot of those coastal communities, starts to connect through Deltona, and then is actually able to include the entire county of Seminole in that district. Now, District 11, similarly impacted by the decisions about whether or not to split Alachua County or Marion County, in option A, you see that it takes the remaining portion of Marion County, connects it with the entire county of Sumter, and then the portion of Lake County that is not in District 6, going around the city of Eustis there in Umatilla, along with some of the other county roads in that area in Lake County. It then gets the remaining portion of its population in Citrus County being another county like Walton County that Kyle talked about earlier, that has to be split for equal population purposes. District 11 has about 95,000 people in Citrus County. And it uses mostly the Lecanto Highway and other major roadways in the area to achieve this. In option B, District 11 keeps Marion County whole, so it does not split Marion County. It takes the remaining portion of Alachua County, including a lot of major roadways around the city of Gainesville, does happen to split the city of Gainesville in this particular configuration. It then takes similar portions of the northern part of Lake County that District 6 does in option A, and then actually goes into Volusia County to fill out the remainder of its population, creating more of a rectangular horizontal effect as opposed to what the option looks like in option A. Again, these are different configurations for these districts, governed mostly by that simple decision about what to do with the remaining portion of St. John's County and Flagler County to the north and how that impacts other districts. Now moving south into the Orlando area, that decision that we had earlier in St. John's County impacted even these districts, but I'm going to jump real quick to districts 8, 9, and 16. Districts 8, 9, and 16 are both are very similar in both options, both to keep counties whole, another principle or methodology that we use to assemble our districts. District 8 along the Space Coast is the same in both options. It includes all of Brevard County and Indian River County, keeps them together. It then becomes just 2,800 people approximately short of that is needed for a congressional district. We chose to go north into Volusia County to get that remaining 2,800 people. By doing so, we were able to keep the city of Oak Hill whole, which is about 1,900 people, along with going up I-95 and taking some of the surrounding area. We're able to achieve that population in a very compact way and then not split Orange County another time or go east. So we were able to keep that district the same in both options. District 9 encompasses the entirety of Osceola County. Which Osceola happens to be about half the population of an entire congressional district. It's about 380,000, a little bit more than that people. The remaining portion of its district, the other half of its population, comes from the north in Orange County. And it gets that population in slightly different ways in both option A and option B, but in both instances uses a lot of the major roadways in the county, such as I-4, the Beachline Expressway, State Road 50, the East-West Expressway, the Central Florida Greenway, among other roads, Curry Foy Road and the Econ River in option B. Option B actually takes the Econ River all the way up to the northern Orange County line, following that all the way back down. Both options are very Tier 2 compliant, using a lot of those major roadways within Orange County, and keeps the county of Osceola whole. Option District 9 in both options also happen to be a majority-minority Hispanic district, which is a potential opportunity for the Hispanic population that has grown over this last decade. District 16 is the same in both options. This decade, we were able to keep Polk County entirely whole in its own district. However, keeping Polk County whole, it is about 44,000 people short of what is needed for a congressional district. In our options, we then go into Hillsborough County in a very compact way, able to use State Road and County Road 39 to create a very flat, compact line along its eastern border. We do happen to split the city of the Plant City line in order to achieve equal population that's necessary for a congressional district. Now, these three counties kind of form that county line that goes all the way across the state, forcing all of the remaining decisions to go east and around down through Tampa that we'll get to shortly. But going back into the Orange County area, after we take 380,000 people necessary to fill out Congressional District 9, what do we do with Congressional 7 and 10? Now, that's a little bit different based on what we did with the population and that little tiny piece of St. John's and Flagler County up to the north. And option A, because District 6 starts getting its population up in the northern part of the state with the remainder of St. John's County and Flagler County, it does not have to go down into Seminole County to get population. So it leaves a little bit extra population in Volusia County that District 7 takes, along with the entire county of Seminole County, and then goes into Orange County to get the remaining about 280,000 people it needed to fill out its congressional lines. Now, in option B, because District 6 is the one that keeps Seminole County whole within it, District 7 becomes entirely within Orange County, very similar to option A's District 10, which is also wholly within Orange County. They may look a little different. They start in different places in the county, but they have very similar makeups and are both wholly within Orange County. District 10 in option B takes the remaining 280,000 people of Orange County and connects it with the remainder of Lake County, all of Sumter County, and then splits Citrus County in exactly the same way that District 11 does in option A, using the Lecanto Highway before we start to move south into Tampa Bay. And to get into Tampa Bay, I'm going to turn it over to Kyle.
Thank you, Jason. So moving into the greater Tampa Bay region, we can see this area is made up primarily of four congressional districts and parts of three others that move into the Hillsborough area. In these two options, there are trade-offs, co-equal Tier 2 criteria, and we're going to explore these now between the two options. Starting in option A, we'll start with CD-12, which contains part of Pinellas, Hillsborough, and Pasco counties, primarily utilizes major roadways, State Road 52, which makes up its northern border in Pasco County, follows along the Suncoast Parkway for its eastern border into Hillsborough County, and follows Dale Mabry Highway, Gunn Highway, and Limbaugh Avenue. Moving into Pinellas County, CD-12 primarily follows the Courtney Campbell Causeway, the Bayside Bridge, and Olmerton Road, or State Road 688, to complete its boundary line. CD-15 borders CD-12 in Pasco and Hillsborough counties, in addition to keeping the entirety of Hernando County whole within this district, as well as taking the remainder of Citrus County. It shares a border with CD-14 and 16 in Hillsborough and follows Fletcher Avenue, I-4, and State Road 39, as well as some other roadways to achieve equal population. CD 14 and option A is kept entirely within Hillsborough County. It borders five other districts, following as many primary roadways as possible, such as Dale Mabry Highway on the west side, Fletcher Avenue and I-4 on the northern side, State and County Road 39 on the east side, and County Road 672, Balm Road, and Big Bend Road on the southern side. Following these roads help us create a very visually compact district within, wholly kept within Hillsborough County. CD 13 takes the remainder of Pinellas County and connects it with the remaining population in Hillsborough County. So in option A, three of the four districts, CD 12, 15, and 14, all have better mathematical compactness scores than in option B. Option B, however, provides other tier two metrics to consider as a trade-off and a policy choice before this committee. So moving into option B, we'll start with CD 12. In this version, CD 12 takes the remainder of Citrus County, all of Hernando County, and moves into Pasco and part of Pinellas County. It follows some of the similar roads along with U.S. Highway 41, State Road 54, and again follows the Suncoast Parkway. In option B, moving to District 13, this district is kept wholly within Pinellas County and keeps as many cities whole as possible. It primarily follows along the northern boundary, the city lines of Dunedin, Clearwater, Safety Harbor, and Oldsmar along that northern border and is bordered by the Pinellas County boundary line on its east, west, and south sides. CD 14, again, located wholly within Hillsborough County as an option A. This time it's in more of a rectangular orientation. It utilizes primary roadways Hillsborough Avenue, Bush Boulevard, and I-4 along its northern border with CD 15. State and County Road 39, again, is the border between CD 14 and District 16, and then follows the same roads to the south, Balm Road, Big Bend Road, and County Road 672. CD 15 then connects the remaining populations of Pasco and Hillsborough counties to complete the remaining district in this area. Some tier two options that option B explores is it reduces the number of times Hillsborough County is split from six times in option A to only four times in option B. It also keeps CD 13 wholly within Pinellas County and keeps the district wholly within Hillsborough County. And these are some and the main difference is keeping those districts whole sacrifices some of those mathematical compactness scores that are better in option A. And then moving south, there are three districts, District 17, 18, and 19. They're the same in both workshops, A and B. CD 17 takes the remainder portion of Hillsborough County and combines it with all of Manatee County and Sarasota and part of Sarasota County. So if we examine that line that Jason mentioned earlier, that the county lines that kind of travel across the state between District 8, 9, and 16. If we take into account all of the county populations south of that, all of those counties combined come up around 112,722 people short of a full 12 congressional districts. So at some point, a district will have to go north to grab some population, which is what is done in District 17 and crosses into Hillsborough County. Moving down to CD 18, CD 18 takes the remaining part of Sarasota County and includes seven whole counties, Hardy, DeSoto, Charlotte, Highlands, Glades, Okeechobee, and Hendry counties, and then goes into Lee County to achieve equal population. It follows primary roads along the Hancock Bridge Parkway, Pine Island Road, and County Roads 765, and also follows the Abel Canal and the Caloosahatchee River. CD 19 takes the rest of Lee County and gets its remaining population south into Collier County, keeping both the cities of Naples and Marco Island whole. It follows, it goes south into Collier County along I-75, US 41, and Collier Boulevard, and only deviates to achieve equal population. There is a slight difference in option A and B, and that's just where equal population was achieved, but they are effectively the same districts. And I'm gonna turn it back over to Jason to go over Southeast Florida.
Thank you, Kyle. So now we'll jump over to Southeast Florida. Now, districts 21, 22, 23, and 25 in the Palm Beach and Broward County areas are largely impacted by the shape of Congressional District 20, after which, performing a functional analysis, Congressional District 20 is a protected black district and has been created to ensure minority groups have the ability to elect a candidate of their choice in both options, even though they look very different in both options. In option A, Congressional District 20 is kept wholly within Broward County. It connects the black populations in central and northern Broward counties and cities, such as but not limited to Fort Lauderdale, Pompano Beach, Deerfield Beach, Tamarack, Lauderhill, Margate, and others, with the black population in southern Broward County, including the entire city of Miramar and parts of Pembroke Pines and West Park. In addition to using the Broward County line on its north, west, and eastern southern boundaries, it also uses a lot of other major roads throughout the area and a lot of other city lines in the area, including the city of Weston and other municipals lines in the area. In option B, the black population in North Broward County, in a very similar manner as in option A, this time is connected with the Palm Beach County black population in a very similar way to the current Congressional District 20 does. But in this option, now it does it in a way that respects more major roadways in the area, such as US 441, I-95, the Florida Turnpike, including city boundaries, including keeping the entire city of Lake Park within it, and using the Intercoastal Waterway as a boundary along the eastern side of it. These are two different ways of drawing a legally compliant protected district in this area. Congressional District 20 in Option A respects the principle of county boundaries and keeping districts wholly within counties when possible, while Congressional District 20 in Option B is actually more mathematically compact, scoring better in two of the three compactness scores. Its REOC score in Option B is 0.50 compared to 0.44 in Option A. Poulsby-Popper is 0.28 in Option B compared to 0.22 in Option A. So these are just different trade-offs with these Tier 2 standards that can be married with the Tier 1 protection of a district. Congressional District 21 includes all of St. Lucie and Martin counties in both options, and in both options includes just over 280,000 people in Palm Beach counties, but they do so in different ways based on how Congressional District 20 interacts with Palm Beach County. In Option A, Congressional District 21 includes the area in western Palm Beach counties, including the cities of Belgrade and Pahokee, but also keeps the city of Palm Beach Gardens, Riviera Beach, Jupiter, and others wholly within it, and uses these city boundary lines for most of its southern border along District 22, before also using the Loxahatchee Natural Wildlife Refuge, which is kind of that bell shape that you see in the bottom there. That's actually not something, that's not a geographic area that is technically a part of what we can consider, but because it is such a large consideration there in Palm Beach County, it often serves as the boundary between districts where the population center ends in Palm Beach and the less populated area of Palm Beach starts. We are limited by the geographies in the census blocks, and in this area they can be very large and complicated, so including them all in the same district is generally the better solution, but that is something that we can explore. It also uses the Palm Beach and Broward County line, along with the Palm Beach County line to the east to finish out its boundary. In option B, This district stays in northern Palm Beach County, primarily using a railway to come diagonally down from the county line to where it meets Congressional District 20, using Okeechobee Boulevard and the rest of the Congressional District 20 line, using a lot of the same streets and roads we talked about previously, before going out to the coast using the inner, the Palm Beach inlet. In option A, Congressional District 22, which is the red district, includes all of West Palm Beach, Wellington, which is why the district goes kind of bows out to the west side. Lost my place. Wellington and other cities moving south to get all the necessary population for the district while remaining entirely within Palm Beach County in a very compact shape while respecting as many of the city boundaries as possible, while equalizing population in the city of Boynton Beach, which is the only city in option A that happens to be split. In option B, Congressional District 22 extends north to the inlet to meet Congressional District 21 before coming south to US 441 and includes the entire city of Wellington. That is the point that you see that goes out there. That is why the district has that configuration. It also uses the National Wildlife Refuge, as we talked about before, to create that bell shape until it goes south to get the remaining population necessary for the district. And in option B, Congressional District 22 southern border uses the Boca Raton and Highlands Beach municipal lines for much of its boundary and achieves equal population in a little bit west of that. In option 23, Congressional District 23 takes the remaining part of Palm Beach County and then takes the northern part of Broward County that is not within Congressional District 20, including the entire city of Boca Raton, Delray Beach, and Parkland, while using the Loxahatchee and Everglades National Wildlife Refuges for its western border, simply, again, because we're limited by the geography that we have available to us. And it meets Congressional District 25 along the south, along Atlantic Boulevard, and the Lake Santa Barbara and Pompano Canals. In option B, Congressional District 23 takes in much of the same area but goes all the way down to the Broward County line, actually, along primarily using Route 1 as its western border between 25 and 23. In option B, the border between 20 and 23 uses as many city lines for its boundary as possible, except where it needs to deviate for equal population. It keeps the city of Coral Springs, Margate, and Coconut Creek whole. In both options, Congressional District 25 is wholly within Broward County. In option A, District 25 shares the northern border with the protected district of District 20, but also includes the whole cities of Weston, Southwest Ranches, Davie, Cooper City, and parts of others, while extending north to meet the southern border of Congressional District 23, and then to the south on the Broward County line and the Miramar City line. In option B, Congressional District 25 is more mathematically compact and uses many more major roadways than in the other version, including I-75, the Sawgrass Expressway, the Florida Turnpike, I-95, Davie Boulevard, Sunrise Boulevard, Broward Boulevard, and US 441. A lot of these same roadways are used in both options, but in slightly different manner. On the east side, Route 1 is the primary boundary with Congressional District 23 and the Broward County line to the south, along with the municipal lines of Weston, Southwest Ranches, Pembroke Pines, and Miramar to the west before you go out into the unpopulated Everglades territory. There are many cities in Broward County, many of which are actually interlocked with each other, as we demonstrated in some of the previous committee meetings. And because of the other Tier 1 protected districts that are in the area, sometimes it becomes more difficult to keep cities whole in this area. But we have done the best we can to show the committee different options and how that can be achieved. Now moving south into the Broward County area, we'll first kind of, or I'm sorry, into the Miami-Dade in Monroe area, we'll kind of zoom out and show all these districts just because they encompass a large area before we zoom in to the area in Miami-Dade County where all of these districts really come together. So here you can see District 26 encompasses the northern part of Miami-Dade County and then goes into Collier County to get its remaining population. District 28 extends in Miami-Dade County to the south and includes all of Monroe County, including our favorite Florida fun fact, the Dry Tortugas Islands. And now if we zoom in, we can get a better look at how all of these districts here interact. So after performing a functional analysis, Congressional District 24 is a protected black district that has been created to ensure minority groups have the ability to elect a candidate of their choice in both options, even though they look slightly different. They are slightly different because of how Congressional District 20 interacts with South Broward County in option A. But they both ensure that the minority groups have ability to elect a candidate of their choice in both options. Congressional District 24 includes many whole cities along the coast of Miami-Dade, including Aventura, North Miami, Biscayne Park, North Miami, Miami Shores, Opa-locka, among others. And along its northern side, it uses the Miami-Dade County line, except for where it crosses into Broward County. I should say that in both options, Congressional District 4 crosses the Broward and Miami-Dade County line. That has to be done for equal population reasons, but we have ensured that this is actually the only district that crosses the Broward-Miami-Dade County line. Within Miami-Dade County, Congressional District 24 uses many major recognizable roadways in the area, including I-95, 27th Avenue, 47th Avenue, among others. Including some municipal lines. In option B, there's a little extension that sticks out from the western boundary of Congressional District 24. That is actually the municipal lines of Opa-locka. So you can see we've tried to use those boundaries where possible. Congressional District 26, 27, and 28 are all protected Hispanic majority-minority districts, and with the functional analysis that staff conducted, ensuring that minority groups can elect candidates of their choice in each of these three districts. Congressional 26 is very similar in both options, with only slight differences based on how 24 has to interact with Broward County, and as the ripple effect kind of moves throughout the whole region as you do different things with Congressional District 20. In both options, Congressional District 26 connects part of the Collier County, not in CD19, with population in Miami-Dade County using the Collier, Broward, and Miami-Dade County lines primarily, along with I-75 and US 441, which is the Tamiami Trail, as well as the Dolphin Expressway as it moves further into Miami-Dade County before meeting up with the Congressional District 24 line and going north using the same boundary line back up to the Miami-Dade County line, while including the entire city of Hialeah, Hialeah Gardens, Medley, Doral, Miami Lakes, among others. Congressional District 27 primarily uses the Dolphin Expressway along its northern border in both options, and then uses the Florida Turnpike along its western border in both options. In option A, District 27 includes more of the city of Miami and a part of Miami Beach. So to compensate for this, its western boundary moves from the Florida Turnpike to US 1 on its western side. This is also done to ensure in this option, the city of Cutler Bay to the south is kept wholly within it. Palmetto Bay and then Cutler Bay just beneath that is kept wholly within the district in option A. In option B, Cutler Bay is split, not doing that same deviation off the Florida Turnpike. This was, again, to demonstrate to the committee that you can make different policy choices in keeping a city whole or not and how that would impact the rest of the district lines. In option B, then continue to not divide Cutler Bay. District 28 is very similar in both options, using the Tamiami Trail and the Florida Turnpike, except for where it deviates to compensate for what we did with Cutler Bay and District 27, but otherwise its boundaries is more or less the same in both options. This is also an example, if you look at District 28 and 27 and how they come together in the water a little differently, how we, have to use the census geography that we have, and the block lines, the water block lines, are a little bit different, and in this case, we used a little bit of the Coral Gables city lines rather than just take the other water block lines, but you can see how you can manipulate the shape of a district by choosing where to include the water block lines. And this was just a way to show the committee that you can do this in different ways. And that, Mr. Chairman, are the two workshop options.
All right, thank you very much, Kyle and Jason Lita, for the presentation. Members will now move into questions. I would ask just a reminder of our ground rules. If you would pose one question at a time, you can present questions to the chair, and we'll continue in that fashion. Members, any questions? Representative Panchowski, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, as part of my question, I'm just going to say how excited I am to be on this committee. It's a big honor, I believe, to be part of this process. Having said that, if you could just explain to someone like myself who's completely new to this, is a little technologically challenged with these maps, what was the process that you started with? Like, how did you make the decision where to start in the process? And when you were looking at the Tier 2 standards, I heard compact come up, and then I heard geographical boundaries come up. Where did you prioritize, or how did you make the decision on which you would prioritize along the way? I hope that made sense.
Thank you, Representative. Ms. Kelly, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative. It's a very good question, and the reality is there's no one right way to start. I think a good starting point, and, you know, one of the first things we did look at is how the population has shifted throughout the state. You know, that is kind of the foundation for why we are required to redistrict, is to make sure we understand, you know, people move into Florida, and unfortunately, they don't just move to one city. They disperse amongst the state, and obviously, the population shifts within the state as well. So I think that's one, you know, good place and good consideration for everyone to keep in mind. From there, we obviously have, you know, federal and state legal requirements to ensure that minority communities, where they're protected, have the ability to continue to elect representatives of their district. And then from there, you kind of, you know, just start to build them out. And I know that may sound odd, but there's no one right place in the state to start drawing. Sometimes you start to draw a configuration and the math doesn't work out, it doesn't come together, or, you know, you realize maybe there's an opportunity to improve your Tier 2 compactness scores, things of that nature that you've mentioned. So you kind of just start exploring.
Representative Henchowski, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Chair. So I guess I wasn't very specific. I don't know who did these. I guess part of the question would be, who did these maps? And whoever did the maps, where did that person begin? I'm trying to understand, I guess, the process that was gone through to come up with either option. I know we went through each section, but usually before you make any decision, I think you set sort of a set priorities in your own mind of how you want to approach this, where you want to begin. And so I kind of like to just understand that whoever the person or people were, what was their process making and what did they prioritize in the Tier 2 standards, obviously knowing we have to have the Tier 1 standards before we have the Tier 2, because I paid attention to all the presentations. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Panchowski, for the question. You know, our House staff has been with us since the beginning. I think this is our fifth or sixth committee meeting where we have spent time building the foundational knowledge together, working through the legal precedent, the constitutional standards, some of the history of the redistricting process. And as I said at the beginning of our comments, what we have before us today are workshop options that staff put together that I think illustrate for us very well the different application of the tiers, some of the options that we have as policymakers, some of the challenges that are associated with putting a map together. So staff presented these workshop maps to us in the spirit of providing this committee something to take a look at that provides some very real, tangible application of what we've been learning about over the past couple of weeks. And I think you see some pretty good examples where the tiers compete with one another in terms of maintaining compactness versus keeping existing political boundary lines together and trying not to split counties. So this is very much, I think, the beginning of a conversation and really an exercise that helps us see how it all works. Representative Panchowski, you have another follow-up?
And I apologize. I didn't know when we were getting these, and we got them Monday, and it's kind of been a busy week, so I didn't have as much. I thought I had more time this week, and it wasn't as much. Personally, coming from, and the reason I'm concentrating on those Tier 2 standards and where the priorities are, coming from local government originally, obviously cities, I understand how city representation and population representation can kind of get diluted when you're split up in different areas. So, like, that's why I was talking about the Tier 2 standards and trying to understand when a choice was there between compactness and boundaries, kind of how those choices were made and why those choices were made, because I saw in some areas we have very small cities that are broken up, like very small cities, and then in other areas we have large cities that weren't broken up. And as somebody coming from a small city, I know how that can impact the weight that that city has in the district. So that's kind of where I hope I'm explaining that well.
You are, Representative Pachowski, and I appreciate the good questions. You always bring such great questions to committee. And what I think would be appropriate is I'm going to ask staff to revisit some examples for us that we just saw through our presentation to kind of walk us through maybe where the tiers conflict with one another and what options we have as the policymakers to sort that out.
That would be wonderful.
So, Ms. Kelly, you're recognized.
Thank you. And I think you touched on something that's really important as well. You know, whenever you're looking at existing, whether it's geographical boundaries or political boundaries or compactness scores, all of those fall within a tier where they are co-equal trade-offs, right? So I think you bring forward a very, very valid point. One of the areas I'd like to zoom into, and we'll be able to walk through an example as the chair has requested, is this in backup in the north central Florida area between District 5 and 11, and how, you know, splitting Gainesville or counteractively splitting Ocala between our two districts can impact those compactness scores. And Jason, I'll drive if you would like to walk through the numbers.
Sure. So here, as we talked about before, you have these two different options of what to do with Congressional District 5. Congressional District 5 as a whole in option A is more compact than Congressional District 5 when you look at the mathematical compactness scores. You are also able to keep the city of Ocala whole within District 5 in Marion County if you do the split down there. Conversely, in this particular option, in order to use a lot of the major roadways that are there coming up to Gainesville, but because of the way the population is distributed in Alachua County and how it's centered in Gainesville, it wasn't really possible, at least in this initial iteration. It doesn't mean that there isn't a way to keep Gainesville whole here, but this was a way of instead of using the municipal lines, using the more major roadways to create a more visually pleasing divide in Alachua County as kind of a trade-off of all of those co-equal Tier 2 different ideas of either following city lines, county lines, which counties to split, or do you follow more major roadways and create a more pleasing visual shape. Those were all co-equal things, and in our options, we attempted to demonstrate all of those things for the committee, so you can see how these co-equal Tier 2 standards can be done one way or done a different way, but they're all co-equal, so there wasn't one priority made over another. We just went through the map and tried to find different ways of demonstrating those different choices to the committee.
May I ask one more real quick?
Thank you. Representative Pachowski, you're recognized.
Okay. And I'm hoping to spend some time over kind of the holidays to kind of go through all this. We have several protected seats. So do you kind of map those out before when you're starting in your process, or do you hit them as you come across? I don't know if I'm explaining. So like when you start to in the process, do those get kind of mapped out beforehand and then you start in one section and move through, or do you just map them out as you move through the process?
Thank you, Representative. Maybe we'll assign prioritize. How do we prioritize those options? We'll ask Ms. Kelly if you would respond, please.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. We're aware of those. Obviously, we have a legal requirement under state and federal law to make sure that those groups have the ability to elect. So, you know, we look at our benchmark map and understand where that may be a starting point. But I would say it does evolve as you make sure that you move throughout the region and you make sure that as you go, where there may have been population shifts, you've accounted for that. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you kind of adjust as you build out the entirety of your map.
Thank you very much. Ranking Member Skidmore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I ask my question, I think I'm making more of a comment. I'm a little disappointed, I think, that we didn't participate more in the creation of the map or the policy decisions behind or the methodology behind how all of this was going to be drawn. And
if I could interject, and I apologize for interrupting you, but I want to stop you there because I think it's important to note that, what you're describing is exactly the purpose of this workshop today. We have these workshop maps. Like any other workshop that we have in the House of Representatives, it's an opportunity for us to gain information, to gain understanding, to gain some perspective. So the workshop maps that we have before us today, as I said earlier, they're not bills, they're not PCBs. Mm-hmm. They are a real-world application, an opportunity for the members of this committee to take a look at how the standards apply to different options that we will proceed from here. But again, this is very much a starting point of our discussion today. It's a natural progression of the education process that we have. So I want to be careful to not mislead anybody into believing that this is somehow a product that is going to turn into a PCB and we're going to move forward. This is merely today part of our continuing education. And I apologize for interrupting you, but I think it was important to point that out. So if you have a question on the process, we can move on from there.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that helps me a lot in understanding. You know, I'm kind of a person who strives for an A all the time, and I felt coming into this process that I didn't have all my ducks in a row to be able to fully participate. And so I appreciate that this is the beginning and that we have an opportunity to now be able to participate more fully. I'm also, and I will get to a question, I promise you, also a little disappointed that many of the members of our Black Caucus are out of town this week and are not here to be able to begin this process with us. So to that end, we won't be meeting again until sometime in January. What opportunities will we have in the interim to be able to engage really more fully in this process so that we have a better understanding of what's coming out at the end?
Well, thank you very much for that question. You know, and I really can't speak to members' scheduling issues, but what I will say is I strive both as an individual member and as chairman of this committee to be fully accessible to members that have any question on any subject matter related to our process. And while Chair Leek and I have not had a conversation regarding this specific subject, I feel safe in speaking for him as well and saying that he shares the belief as I do with regard to our accessibility and being responsive and open to hearing the concerns of all 120 members of this House in terms of this process and how we move forward. So my door is open. Please, you know, I would encourage any member to feel free to reach out at any time. In terms of public input, as we move forward, you know, and this kind of speaks to Representative Hinchofsky's point earlier, we do have the benefit of the next 6 weeks before we come back to go home, to hear the input from our constituents and the members of the public in our communities, and to bring some of that knowledge and perspective back to Tallahassee. Of course, I would ask you to keep it within the framework of our tiers and our constitutional requirements. But between the interim period before session begins, the extensive capability that exists on our website, not to mention the opportunity for the public to join us here in committee to provide some input, in addition to the duty that all of us have as representatives to be in touch with the folks in our district, I feel comfortable that there's sufficient opportunity for there to be plenty of public input as we move forward, plenty of opportunity for that. Ranking Member, you're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that end, was any of the public input that was posted on the website taken into account when drawing the maps? I looked at several of the folks who had written in and said, you know, Gainesville shouldn't be split, and, you know, different. There were a lot of different viewpoints. And so was any of that taken into consideration as the mappers were drawing or making the lines?
Thank you very much, Ranking Member. At a conceptual level, yes. But again, as we talked about in an earlier meeting, I think as we move forward and we do begin work on a product, members have the opportunity to go in and review those as well. It's open to everyone, the members of the public as well as the members of the committee, including the data that is used to build these materials. It's all available on the website. So I would encourage members, if you review that and you see something that you think warrants further discussion, bring it forward to a committee meeting. Bring it forward as a part of the amendatory process. And that is something that will unfold as session begins. Members, other questions? Representative Lernan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'll just start by saying this is the first time I've been a part of this committee, so thank you. This is the first time I think we've been on a committee together, so thank you for having me. And I might be a little bit behind the group because I didn't get the same amount of participation in the prior committee meetings. I was hoping my first question could just be, I swear I'm a smart guy. What is the definition of contiguous?
Ms. Kelly, if you'd like to take that one.
So one of our constitutional requirements is that districts are contiguous. And so last decade, the Supreme Court was able to define that as, you know, whenever a district touches. They were specific to say that if it touches at just a point, that is does not meet the contiguity requirement. So if you, for instance, you know, if you're looking at the districts here up on the slide, you can see, you know, between districts 5 and 2 where they touch there in those counties, that's at a full county boundary, which would satisfy that requirement.
Representative, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So speaking specifically to option A in the Tampa Bay region, it sounds to me like you're saying that crossing a body of water meets the definition of contiguous. Is that correct?
Ms. Kelly, you're recognized.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So is any body of water therefore deemed to be able to be used to satisfy a contiguous requirement? Like, so for example, could Key West be looped in with Apalachicola because you can draw a straight line between those two points?
Ms. Kelly, you recognized?
Thank you. Yes, in theory, yes, that would be contiguous. I would say that would definitely raise some other tier two issues, perhaps. One of the things we did cover in a previous committee was kind of a fun fact we threw out there. As we mentioned earlier, the Monroe County comes down and there's 70 miles between Key West and the Dry Tortuga. So obviously that's a substantial amount of water in between those two pieces of geography. But that is a valid connector. And Florida is one of 5 or 6 states across the country that have a unique situation like that.
Representative Lernan, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to expand on that a little bit. So you were saying that linking Apalachicola with Key West would meet the contiguous requirement, but you said there's other tier two requirements it wouldn't meet. Can you just tell me what those second tier two requirements that would then violate?
Ms. Kelly, you're recognized?
Not that they would violate them. I would say, you know, if you're drawing a district from Key West up to Pensacola, could potentially raise some compactness issues, but not necessarily. If I said that, I apologize, I misspoke. It's not that it would violate it.
Final question, Representative Lernan.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So is the reason for the compactness then that the communities would have to be similar, or is the reason for compactness to meet the mathematical requirement that you're using to score your map? And I guess my question, therefore, is, are we saying that you can't link Key West with Apalachicola because those communities have little in common with each other, or because of the sheer mileage between them?
Thank you very much. I'll take that one, Representative Lernan. Compactness is an issue that has been recognized by the courts as being acceptable in terms of redistricting. And I think it's what you're speaking to, and I want to be clear for members, what you're speaking to is communities of interest. and communities of interest cannot be substituted for any of the Tier 1 or Tier 2 standards. Communities of interest are an issue that falls supplemental to the two-tier system constitutional requirements that we have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Members, other questions? Representative Hinchofsky.
Thank you, Chair. What is, so today we're having this workshop process. We didn't know from the last meeting what our next meeting was going to hold. What does this look like going forward? Because to be honest, we had presentations for several weeks. We didn't know if and when maps were coming, not coming. We didn't know whether they were real maps, workshop maps, or whatever we call them. So just from a process standpoint, are you going to outline what our next steps are, what those look like, what that means for us each as individuals, what our part is in it or not, is just general.
Thank you, and I appreciate the your question. I think you've probably learned, having worked with me for a little while now, I don't rush into anything. What I think is important here is that we have the benefit of some time. You have received a tremendous amount of information today. We have gone over a lot during this workshop, and there's certainly a huge amount of information that's contained in our two workshop maps. I think that it's appropriate for us to kind of digest what we've learned today. And as we move forward, I think a conversation about what we've learned, the public input that we've received in this interim period, you're certainly going to have additional questions, over the next few weeks. I know I'll be thinking about this on the drive home today. But, I think that we're going to continue moving forward in a way where we are diligent. We're answering questions. We're taking a look at our options, because the best thing that we can do for ourselves as policymakers is to be well-informed on this task that we have ahead of us. So, my answer to you would be, we're going to continue to work on this, to discuss it, and learn, and then apply these lessons to our work of creating maps. Representative Hinchofsky, you're recognized.
Sorry, Chair. Thank you very much. I guess I'm looking for something a little more. Patience has never been my virtue, which I appreciate that it is one of yours. I just want to get an idea, because when we get here, I remember last session, I know it was COVID, so maybe it was a little different, but it felt like just kind of thrown into something, and then all of a sudden it's over and it's a race against time, it feels like, in the 60 days. So I guess what I'm just looking for is some sort of an outline of, and nothing on this day we're doing this, but just what that timeline could or should look like for us, just from a preparation standpoint, personally. Thank you.
Thank you.
And like, who submits what and when, and just kind of those kind of how that works.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. No. Thank you for your question. I think that, moving forward, what we ought to be doing as individual committee members is continuing to review our constitutional standards. Each of us has a duty to ignore that noise that's out there on the periphery that I think we're all going to be subjected to. So it's important for you to create that firewall and to stay true to our constitutional standards. In terms of what each member should be tasked with, I think reviewing these workshop maps, reviewing the constitutional standards, receiving that public input from your community, from your constituents is important. In terms of a timeline, when we return for session in January, which is our constitutionally mandated period to complete this function, I think our first series of meetings are going to be potentially some wrap-up of any lingering questions that you have related to our workshop options. And then we're going to move forward, toward completion of a work product. Representative Benjamin, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so when you say that the wrap-up of a particular product, are we saying at some point during this process we're going to look at changes, proposed changes that may be requested of this process? Is that what you mean when you say a final product?
Thank you very much. I think what we see today in terms of workshop maps is a starting point for what we're going to be moving toward. And I don't say that to specifically mean it's going to be these workshop maps. Like I said, these maps are not a bill. They're not a PCB at this point. This is simply examples of the application of our tiered standards. Again, I would go back to a comment earlier for all committee members. If you have questions, if you have a policy point that you'd like to see displayed in terms of how it affects the map and how it could potentially do things differently, don't wait to provide that feedback to our committee staff. I would encourage you not to wait until session to make that ask. Let them walk through with you what the different options look like for, you know, a policy decision that you may be interested in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sorry, ranking member.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Honchofsky was getting a little bit at what I was trying to get at. And in terms of being able to provide information to our constituents who are interested in participating publicly, it's not easy for South Floridians to get up here and plan. So understanding that, you know, we don't have a schedule really in advance, is there, you know, mid-session or in the first 2 weeks we hope to vote a map out of our committee or anything like that, that we can help our constituents understand in terms of planning and being able to, you know, come here and participate because there's no other option for them except, you know, submitting something via the website?
Thank you very much for the question. I'm not prepared to talk a specific schedule today. I don't have a vision for that in mind. What I will tell you, though, I think it's why our Constitution speaks to the fact that this work is to be completed during session, because Floridians have the expectation that during that 60-day period, their elected representatives are here in Tallahassee conducting the people's business. So it makes good sense that that's why the redistricting process is mandated to be completed during our legislative session. So in terms of members of the public that are interested in participating in that process, just like any other bill, just like the budget, we have a 60-day window where we come together and we complete that work. And I hope Floridians take advantage of the opportunity to share with us either here in person at the Capitol or through our website their input and their thoughts on this process. Are there any other committee members with questions? Representative Lernan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I wanted to go back to a question or a comment you made about communities of interest, the staff made about communities of interest. And again, this is a little bit of my education, I guess. So looking at the map, this is the first time I've seen these. So it looks like our four largest public universities are on the border of the various districts in the maps, right? Like, so these college towns are getting split into a couple different ways. Would a university count as a community of interest?
Ms. Kelly, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative. Yes, last decade, the Supreme Court was able to go through and identify the geographical, the political boundaries, and items like what you just described with universities don't fall within any of those definitions and would constitute kind of that larger catch-all bucket of a community of interest. And not exclusively limited to those, but that specific example, yes.
One final follow-up, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I know in Hillsborough, for example, and this is like a philosophical question, I guess. So Hillsborough, under the map, option A, I believe, is split into five different congressional districts. But I mean, just based on the population formula that you have, you could mathematically draw Hillsborough into just two. I guess what I'm asking is, in order to satisfy that the requirement to try to keep historical political boundaries and all that somewhat similar, is it better to do it into fewer districts, or are you like purposely trying to do it in as many as possible?
Thank you, Representative. You know, the point that you raise and what you describe is a policy decision that's left up to the work of the committee members. You certainly will have an opportunity to contribute to that as a member of the legislature. But one of the things that we also have to take into account in terms of what you describe is how those impacts affect the surrounding counties and the districts that are also involved. So that's something to keep in mind in terms of how it all works together. Representative Beltran.
Thank you, Chairman. And I do want to ask some questions. I do want to thank the staff, especially for their explanation. I understand a lot better the process and why the maps look like they do. So I do appreciate it. I do appreciate your hard work on that. I do want to ask, like my colleague, about Hillsborough. I guess what I see is in one map, I think it's actually split six ways, not five, and the other it's split four ways. In map A, it's split two of the three municipalities are split, and the other map, all the municipalities are split. So I guess my question is, I understand you have to split counties. I understand not all the counties have, you know, the same population as a congressional district or divide perfectly. Is there any consideration to not splitting one county so many times and maybe spreading that out throughout the state? Because we're split more than counties with big populations that have to be split, like Broward and Miami-Dade. Those are only split four times, and we're split more than them. They have almost double our population. So that's one question I'd like to understand a little more.
Ms. Kelly, you're recognized. I'm sorry, Mr. Prater, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in option A, splitting Hillsborough County six times, that was partially to demonstrate the different policy choices that could be made and the different tier two, in that particular orientation, the improvement of the compactness scores. The splits in Hillsborough County were taken into consideration. Also, Hillsborough County happens to be bordered on all four sides by other counties. So what happens in the districts and the counties to the north and all four sides and the leftover population that needs to be included in some district? So Hillsborough County is kind of caught in that particular position. As Kyle, when he went through Southwest Florida, explained, with you, all of the counties south of the Polk, Osceola, and Indian River County line added up were 112,000 people short of a congressional district. Hillsborough County is the county that District 17 went up to get that extra population to make everything equitable. Broward County, some of those other counties that you described, I know Orange County, Palm Beach County has a similar population to Hillsborough County. Each of those counties, a district was kept wholly within it, and then the remaining population was divided among other surrounding districts in all options. So what you're asking, kind of making consistent choices for similarly sized counties, that is a consideration that the committee can make, or there could be a compelling tier two reason to deviate from that from one reason, or there could be a tier one consideration in any of those districts, say such as Duval County, where that type of consideration is not possible because tier one is superior to tier two.
Representative Beltran for a follow-up.
Thank you, Chairman, and I do appreciate that explanation. In terms of the I guess the overlap from the 16, which is identical on both maps, I think you needed about 40,000, and I noted that's about the population of Hardy County. Was there any consideration on doing that instead of overlapping into East Hillsborough?
We did consider several different options. You could go north into Lake County, you could go take Polk County west into Hillsborough County, or you can go south, but that would impact all of the other districts around it, compactness, shape, all that kind of stuff. But that is certainly something we can explore further. If you want to come by our office, we'll be happy to work through those different possibilities with you and see if there's another option out there.
Representative Beltran.
Thank you, Chairman. I guess the similar question, I understand you want to try to keep things, and I understand how you kind of arrived at that east-west line on the southern Hillsborough, Polk, Osceola border. You said you needed a little over 100,000 above that border. That's roughly the population Indian River County. And I guess it's kind of same question. Was there any consideration of that in lieu of overlapping from Manatee into Hillsborough?
Mr. Prater?
We did explore several different things, but some of these situations you're talking about, so for example, taking Polk County south into DeSoto County or into Hardy County that is just south of it, the population of Hardy County is only 25,000 people. So if you were to go south into Hardy County, you would then have to go into another county and split that county. So, and then you start to get into more uncompact shapes. So those options were considered and could be considered in the future if we can find a way to make everything equitable. Same thing with Indian River County. Unfortunately, with congressional districts, close is not, like a district might, the county population might be close to what you need, but you have to achieve exact population equality. So that would necessitate going into yet another county to even out that population. Whereas in Hillsborough County with District 17, we could just go into the one county and get the necessary population. But these are all options that we're happy to explore and see what may come of it.
Representative Beltran for a final question.
Thank you, Chairman, and I do appreciate your indulgence. In the current maps, we are split several ways, as with some of these proposals, and it is an issue that my constituents have been concerned about for many years. Final question. You explained the overlap from Pasco County. Essentially, that was what was left of Hillsborough, and I appreciate you've drawn in both maps a Hillsborough seat or a Hillsborough seat that stays inside of Hillsborough. On option A, there were two crossovers from Pinellas. I noticed in option B, you limited that to one. Does not cross over. Can you just explain those, that cross bay seat, if you will, and then that number 12 and option A? I'd appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Ms. Kelly, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative, for that. So just to remind, in option A that we walked through, we had a goal of being able to, option A and option B differentiated, being able to keep cities whole versus being able to keep counties whole. So one of the items you mentioned in option B, if you see, we follow the Pinellas County border around the east coast of District 13 all the way through the southern boundaries. So we were working to keep those, follow those boundary lines. In option A, we're working towards improved compactness scores. And so, again, just a different way to show it. One is not necessarily superior to the other, but just trying to illustrate those different options.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Tribolsi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I'd like to thank staff for putting these together, and it's a daunting task. I can't imagine how many hours you've put into this. But given the fact that these are indeed workshop maps, as a committee, do we have access with the technology that we have, perhaps over the holidays, to go through, since you've kind of laid some groundwork for us, to go through and manipulate these maps to create better, maybe some better scenarios, and then present those to staff to see if they meet the criteria?
Thank you, Representative. The answer to your question is yes. You have that availability through the ESRI application, and I'm sure that staff would be happy to address any questions that you have over the interim period before we come back in January.
Thank you.
Thank you. Members, other questions? Ranking member for one last question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't mean to ask anyone to have a crystal ball, but I'm just thinking these... whatever we ultimately decide will last for 10 years. So when we're thinking about some of those decisions about splitting counties versus splitting cities, do we try to extrapolate any of those population trends? Or, there's a lot of data in here in terms of where population grew and where we lost it. So is that sort of factored into some of these policy decisions so that we're able to meet the needs of and represent the additional growth?
Thank you very much, Ranking Member. The answer to your question is, I think the short answer is no. Our process is driven by the census data that we were provided, and I would suggest also that over the next decade, we don't have any control over where population moves in our state. We don't have any control over changing municipal boundaries, for example. Members, any other questions? Representative Lernan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my question is going back to 2014, in 2010, the House drew maps and they were thrown out by the courts in 2014. under the League of Women Voters case. The rationale, as I understand it from that court decision, as far as, you know, Rep. Beltran's point about districts crossing Tampa Bay, was that was part of why that map was thrown out. We're going back under these map, option A, it looks like we're going back to the same sort of thing that we tried and failed to do in 2010. So I guess my question is, why?
You know, I'm going to let Ms. Kelly respond to that, but I want to point out, you know, I'm very much focused on the here and now. I feel strongly that the way that we have approached the educational process for our committee members is sound. We've spent a lot of time talking about our constitutional tiers. We've spent a lot of time talking about judicial precedent. I'm not focused on the past. I'm focused on what we have in front of us right now. And I intend to work with this committee and guide our committee members to a final work product that is constitutionally sound. But Ms. Kelly, I'd like to ask you to offer any insight that you might have.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative. I want to draw two distinctions real quick. The House of Representatives, the House map was upheld. And so I know we speak in generalities, but I do want to make sure that we're on the record. The House map was upheld when it was passed in 2012. I believe, and I'd like to work with you more to make sure we're citing the correct legal situation, but the district that went across from St. Pete over into Hillsborough that was thrown out in the middle of the decade was not necessarily because it crossed the bay. It actually hinged on a minority district consideration. That the courts had analyzed and said that wasn't necessary anymore. So that obviously offers a very different consideration than what we're dealing with in the current map. So that is a big distinction. And again, I'm not an attorney, and we have legal counsel to make sure we do analyze those situations appropriately. So if you would like a follow-up, I would definitely offer that offline as well. Thank you.
Members, any other questions from committee members? Seeing none, do we have any public appearance cards? No public appearance cards. Thank you very much. Members, thank you all. Staff, thank you very much for your efforts today. This has been time well spent. And I want to thank all the members for engaging today. We had good questions. I look forward. We have 6 weeks until the beginning of regular session. And I would encourage you to use that time to dive into this a little bit more. As you digest everything we've covered today, because I know it's a lot, I encourage you to reach out to staff, myself, or Chair Leak in the interim if you have questions, feedback, or need technical assistance. Please do not wait until the last minute. As I hope you've come to appreciate today, this process takes a lot of time to be done correctly. For my last piece of parting information, as Chair Leak and I have made abundantly clear, the House strongly encourages members to avoid planned or unplanned conversations about redistricting with individuals who seek to improperly influence your intent and decision-making during the redistricting process. And as always, any materials, emails, texts, or correspondence otherwise related to redistricting should be absolutely retained. Thank you, members. I wish you all a Merry Christmas. This concludes our meeting agenda for today. Ranking Member Skidmore moves that we rise.